coward. It was up to her. Scargill was a countryman whose Northumberland dialect had already proved incomprehensible to those he disdained as foreigners. Besides, he was sadly rheumaticky and would complain bitterly about climbing down from the box. Under other circumstances, either Meg or Penny would have faced the most churlish of innkeepers without turning a hair, but Meg was unwell and Penny burnt to the socket. The Dowager Lady Kilmore, like her elder daughter, was uncomfortable with strangers. She was also inclined to an absent-minded vagueness that made it unwise to leave arrangements to her. Thea took a deep breath, wishing she was 6 inches shorter and that her threadbare blue woolen cloak were a modish velvet pelisse. She stepped down from the carriage. An ostler approached from one side, a waiter with a white napkin over his arm from another. Rushing past them, Thea hurried into the inn. The lobby, brightly lit by oil lamps hanging from the oak beams, was empty but for a few chairs standing against the whitewashed walls. On one side, a door stood open to reveal a glimpse of a busy coffee room from which wafted appetizing odours. On the other side, rowdy voices and the smell of beer came from the tap room. Thea hesitated, dreading the thought of walking into either. She should have spoken to the waiter, she realised in dismay. Then, a stout, rubicund man in a blue coat with shiny brass buttons came out of the coffee room.
"What can I do for you, miss?" he inquired genially.
"We need rooms for tonight. Lady Kilmore and Lady... and the Dowager Lady Kilmore and 2 Mrs. Kilmore.
"I'm right sorry, miss, but you'll have to tell your mistress there's no room."
Thea blushed furiously, feeling dowdier than ever.
I am Miss Kilmore, she stammered.
"Begging your pardon, madam, I'm sure, but it don't make no difference. There was a mill today over to Colley Weston, and the house is full of sporting gents. 'Tis only a matter of 6 miles to Stamford, or 9 to Stilton, if so be you're going south. There's good enough inns both places."
"We cannot go farther. Please, we only need 2 chambers between us, or even 1, if you have truckle beds."
The man looked harassed.
"'Tis the truth, madam," he insisted. "I haven't a single chamber free."
"What's the trouble, Percival?" queried a deep, lazy voice. Down the stairs behind the innkeeper trod a large, fair-haired gentleman in elegant black evening clothes with a plain burgundy satin waistcoat. A ruby gleamed in the knot of his dazzlingly white cravat. Perfectly proportioned for his height, he was light on his feet, moving with the controlled grace of an active, vigorous man. Percival swung round, spreading his hands in a gesture of helplessness.
"My lord, this young lady wants rooms for the night, and I simply don't have any."
Something in the gentleman's amiable face inspired confidence in Thea.
"Sir," she cried, "my sister is wretchedly ill from the motion of the carriage, and my sister-in-law is enceinte. They can go no further tonight."
"Then they shall not, ma'am," he said calmly. "Do you not agree, Will?"
Reaching the bottom of the stairs, the large gentleman moved aside. From behind him emerged a slight figure in a purple coat, pale yellow pantaloons, and a waistcoat embroidered with purple, yellow-scented Michaelmas daisies. His light brown hair, cut in a fashionable Brutus, added an inch or two to his height. But when he had descended the last few steps, Thea saw that his merry blue eyes were on a level with her own.
"I told you your froppery would make the ladies stare," the first gentleman continued, his deep voice amused.
Thea's cheeks grew hot.
I beg your pardon, sir," she faltered.
The young man laughed. "Not to worry, ma'am. A fellow likes to know his efforts are appreciated. What's going on?"